Orphan Black Episode 7 is over, but we're just getting started here at Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. My name is Jessica Leese, and we're here to cover a very exciting and interesting episode of Orphan Black. With me, as always, is the guy I count on to teach me all of my medieval farming card games, Mr. Mike Bloom.
Well, I mean, the game didn't seem that far away from Catan, probably a more complex version of Catan, so this is actually something that I cannot necessarily rebut.
Yeah, it looked like they couldn't get the rights to Catan, or maybe that's Canadian Catan, you know?
What was it called? Like Agricola?
Yeah, Agricola.
Which I guess is like a combination of agriculture and Caligula.
Yeah, or agriculture and Coca-Cola.
That could be it as well. I mean, but if they didn't get the Catan sponsorship, I have no idea how they got the Coke sponsorship, unless, spoiler alert for Mad Men, unless Don Draper was helping them out.
Yeah, I don't know either, but it looked like a very exciting and fun game that Rachel is going to no doubt have trouble pretending to like.
Yeah, it makes sense because it is a little confusing, though, because I don't want to dive too much into the mechanics and minutiae of this game, but it combines elements of Catan with, like, it almost seems like Munchkin. I don't know if you've ever played Munchkin before, but there's like different cards that you can draw that do certain things. So I'm wondering exactly what the facets are. I wonder if this is going to be like True American from New Girl that will actually come up with a set of rules behind it, if the Orphan Black fans are that hardcore.
It could be kind of like Mystic Warlords of Ka'a.
That's true, or Cones of Dunshire.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually, this game basically is Cones of Dunshire, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, again, if it came to life in this world with the Parks and Rec fandom, I can only expect that, I guess depending on how season 3 goes over in general, I would be fine if Agricola came out, and we can try to buy it and have a game night and try to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, or maybe they'll do like a special Orphan Black edition, like, you know how you have Game of Thrones Monopoly and like Star Wars Trivial Pursuit? We can do Orphan Black Agricola, where you build a lab and a compound.
You build a clone.
And a clone and like a secret Mexican army base.
I kind of want Orphan Black Monopoly, but it's just going to sound so bad. Instead of properties, I want them to be characters.
You can't buy people. People are not property.
Yeah, well, that's Orphan Black is still trying to figure that out, though. I think we all know that at the very bottom, I think it's like the purple properties right after you get off the go button or the go space is going to be Donnie.
Absolutely. I don't you mean Mr. Chubbs?
Mr. Chubbs. I love that for so many reasons. First, that I thought that it was just Allison's mother's nickname for him, which is so bad because Donnie isn't even that fat. So he's not like morbidly obese. Yeah. I don't know. I know Canada has a better health system, healthcare and school system than we do here in the U.S. But like, if that's really considered obese, they should really take a look outside of their borders and see what's going on with the world.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Allison, because Allison was really the bulk of every interesting thing that happened this episode, which ticks a couple of boxes on our wish list, to be honest, because we were saying we're not really seeing enough Allison, and we're not seeing enough Allison that relates to anybody else's story in the entire universe. And this week we got plenty of both.
Yep. And it's all because of a urine sample.
Yep. It's all, you know, we owe a lot to pee this week.
As we do all the time, really.
That's true. That's very true. But
yeah, I'll be honest here at the top. I'm not sure what to think of this episode, because I do agree that like it was awesome to see Alice and basically an Allison episode that kind of expounded on this whole drug dealing storyline and the whole school board storyline. And it was nice to see her really back in the main frame. I completely agree with you. That being said, this was a very tropey episode, and you definitely called it last week, and you were talking about like, what sitcom trope are we going to see next? And they threw a bunch in this week. And I'm not sure what to think about that, considering that like last episode was this really badass thing with the Caster compound blowing up and Paul dying. And it's sort of like, I know I go to the Lost well a lot here on this podcast, but it reminds me a lot of the start of season 3 of Lost. So season 2 ended with like the hatch, you know, imploding and blowing up basically. And you start season 3, the first episode is Jack and Kate and Sawyer and Hurley with the others. And the second episode is with Sun and Jin and Saeed in the boat on the other side of the island. Like, you know, everyone's saying, we want to see what happened to the hatch. And Part of me saying, I want to see what happened to the Caster compound.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's kind of like, if you're in the middle of the Lost universe and they start giving you little chunks about the Dharma Initiative, and then the following week it's a Hurley episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly. It's tough. And I mean, Similarly to Lost, actually, I mean, Orphan Black has an ensemble, even though, you know, half the characters are being played by the same actress. It still is an ensemble. And so I will say a plus in this column for the episode is that they were able to, both with Allison and Cosima as well, they were able to bring them into the main vein of the storyline and have it actually work. I was definitely entertained this episode. This wasn't an episode that I said, oh, okay, well, I just 15 more minutes, then I'll get through this and watch something else. But to me, it's one of those, like, one of those things just doesn't belong episodes when you look back at the entire spectrum of the season thus far.
Yeah. Yeah. This is like who took a Three's Company episode and shoehorned it into Orphan Black?
That's really what it was, especially. I mean, I know we talked before about the whole clone switching stuff, but it's really that whole switched envelopes thing that is so tropey.
It's like, why don't you write on the front of your envelopes, Allison? You are the most organized person in the universe. Get out a freaking Sharpie and write on one of them signatures and on the other one drug money.
Yeah, or you would think that, again, Allison is so organized, you think she would like color code all of her office supplies to be like, okay, green means school board, red means drug dealing operation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're gonna have two big projects like this on your, you know, on your docket, you need to be able to distinguish between the two, or things are gonna go very, very badly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I guess it's her lapse in organizational judgment that led to this, though. It's interesting because, again, I'll put another plus in this episode's column. You would think that usually, again, in a Three's Company like setting, that would be the big inciting incident. But really, it's a whole maelstrom of factors, because you have this Cosima being there. And then you have, in addition to the drug dealing envelopes, you have this whole thing going on with the mobster who chopped off Vic's finger. I couldn't get what his name was, because he had about three different names flying past him this episode.
I believe his name is Pouchy.
See, I heard Pouchy. I heard like Master Puzino. I need closed captioning on this show, because, again, like you said, there are so many names being thrown around nowadays that I really need to. And you can't trust reviews too much. I mean, there are reviews online that spell Hendrix two different ways. And now I finally saw from the hashtag this episode that it's spelled with an X instead of a CKS. So I don't know how much I want to trust online reviewers.
Yeah. And I still do not know if Allison has one L or two.
Yeah, that's true as well. I tried to read. I think the shirt had one L on it, but that might have just been a fold over in the fabric.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are things I should know. But like all of my notes, half of it is spelled one way and half is spelled the other way. And, you know, I don't need to be a stickler for this the way that Allison needs to be a stickler about where her drug money is at.
Unless there's another Allison with one L who's, I don't know, like a convicted serial killer. And then if these notes were released to the public, you'd think that you'd be talking about that woman instead of the one on the Orphan Black.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe there's another clone and her name is Allison with two L's.
Wow, that would be so unoriginal.
Well, you know, we've gone to a lot of unoriginal places this episode. Who even knows?
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. So we get to meet Allison's mom finally. And I think apart from Mrs. S, I think this is the first clone parent that we have met.
Yeah. Do you count Sarah and Helena's birth mother?
Yeah.
I forget her name.
Yeah. And I guess the Duncans count too.
Yeah, I guess the Duncans count as well. But I guess this is the first like character that doesn't die in two episodes. Maybe, knock on wood, I don't know if she'll be killed off next episode.
Yeah, well, you know, she does have frequent shortness of breath and panic attacks, so
yeah, that seemed a little bit of like out of the page of Lucille Bluth to me. To like, at first I thought it was staged, but then it turns out she had a panic attack. I'm also trying to figure out whether we're supposed to sympathize with this character as well. You know, it's again a little tropey to have like this woman, the catty mother, and it turns out that she's only doing so for her because she has good intentions and has kind of a bad execution behind them. But we find out this episode that Allison's mother has good intentions subjectively, but objectively those are not. It's basically eugenics.
Yeah, Allison's mother. I don't know if we're supposed to sympathize with her, but spoiler alert, I do not.
Yeah, I really, especially again, when she gives that whole speech to Allison of like, hey, guess what? Your dad's not your real dad. I wanted basically like the strongest sperm. So yeah. I got a donor.
Well, and the fact that she drops that in there in a way that she thinks is going to upset Allison and like catch her off guard. But of course, we know Allison already knows that. So it's not as big a shock as it was supposed to be.
Yeah, very true. And I also wonder what. So let's try. I'm going to try to dissect Allison's mother's psychology here. What was she trying to do this episode before the big speech, obviously, at the end, the Danny Tanner-esque speech that came on? Was she trying to convince Allison to drop out of the race, or is she just kicking Allison while she's down generally?
I'm not sure. I couldn't tell like what was in it for her, apart from maybe just wanting to feel superior, which I get the feeling she did a lot throughout Allison's life.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I mean, she does sympathize herself a little bit in my eyes with this whole idea of like, I think she does want a better life for her daughter. So again, intentions are okay. I think it's execution. You know, just because you want a better life for your daughter doesn't necessarily mean that you need to pick the ideal mate that has perfect statistics so that your daughter can live the best life possible.
Right. Right. And also, you know, your husband, you don't think he's that cool. So you find some, you know, competitive swimmer with, you know, blonde hair and blue eyes to be the actual father of your child.
Now, I think for fairly obvious reasons, I haven't been to a sperm bank ever. Do they like have a screening process? Do they have like strata of sperm saying like, okay, well, this is the A grade. These are the more costly ones. Here's the more like average people.
I don't think they actually quantify them like that, but I know that you get like a catalog and you get to flip through it and be like, you get to read about like this guy's ancestry and, you know, where did he go to college and what does he do for fun? And you can choose like competitive athletes with Ivy League degrees, and they try to recruit people like that because people want that particular genetic material.
That is so weird to me. And I guess it goes back to this whole nature versus nurture thing, but you could just make things up. I could go into a sperm bank and say like, oh yes, I am a Harvard graduate who was on the rowing team. So come at me. And you know, they'll say like, okay, great. And that's, guys can very, I don't know how much the screening process is, but they can very easily lie. And also, I'm not sure, you know, how desirous that is in like, well, he's a Harvard rower. That must mean that his sperm has Harvard rower genes in them. As we all know, that's exactly how genetics work.
Yeah, well, you can get an idea of how someone is built. Like you can, you know, you got two sets of sperm and one of them comes from a jockey and one comes from someone who played like an NBA D league, you know. What size of child do you want, right?
Yeah, which one would you want? Tall baby or short baby? I guess all babies are the same size, relatively. I guess tall child or short child?
I think I would want the tall child just because in our household, that kid would get a complex if it turned out to be short.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as Randy Newman said, I think short people got problems in the world in general. I would rather have a tall child, personally.
Yeah, it's true. So I don't know exactly, like, you know, Allison's only about 5'2", so I guess this was not a concern for Connie Hendricks, but, you know, or maybe it was, and she just got the short end of the deal, because like Allison says, you can't choose your family, even when you try.
And so now I wonder what was going on, you know, when Diet obviously implanted these clones, did they, like, put out ads in, like, sperm centers, sperm banks all over Canada or something?
I think it was more that they had a network of like, they knew people that are in vitro specialists. You know, that's a small community. If you're an in vitro doctor, you know other in vitro doctors. And so pretty much they would just go to these in vitro doctors and either knowingly or unknowingly, you know, slip them something different to stick up in there.
Oh, interesting.
Because I know that Cosimo is also born from in vitro fertilization, and I would imagine most of the Lita clones were probably born the same way, like had some infertile parents that go to the in vitro clinic and they're like, hey, we would like some of our embryos to be implanted. And they're like, here are some embryos. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I wonder, though, was there a screening process for Dyad as well? Did they specifically spot these donors and said, OK, we're going to go after them? Or did they just say, oh, OK, well, we'll just give it to them. They can use them with any person at any time.
I think they must have done some screening because they want to be able to monitor their their experiments, and they want, I think they kept a very close track of everything. Like, as we know, Sarah was a huge curveball to them because they have been tracking every single other one of their clones. What it reminds me of, actually, is the classic Ira Levin novel, which was made into a movie called The Boys from Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it.
Oh my God, Mike, you got to see this. This is, actually, the book is a little bit better. And Ira Levin, he's the guy that wrote Rosemary's Baby, and he's written a couple of other great novels. But the premise of this is that in the late 1940s, there was a bunch of Nazi scientists that collaborated to clone Hitler and then adopt out all of the Hitler babies across the world to try to make Hitler come back. And so there are all these little boys who are all clones of each other, and they're Hitler clones. And they were very careful to find these households that wanted to adopt a boy, and they had, like, the same family background as Hitler. Like, the father was a civil servant. He was much older than the mother. And they had them in all these different countries, and all of these boys were genetically identical. And then someone finds out about it, and, you know, it turns out that because these kids are in healthy... they're in healthy homes, they're going to grow up okay, and they're not going to turn into Hitler.
So do you think Dyad was watching that movie and they're like, yeah, we should do that? I guess if it was made in the 70s, that would make more sense. Yeah.
Orphan Black owes a lot to The Boys from Brazil. It's like, what if it wasn't Hitler? What if it was just a random girl?
Will The Boys from Brazil get pissed at the Orphan Black Monopoly set that is soon to be released?
Yeah. Boys from Brazil Monopoly, just not as much fun.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know where the Grand Poobah himself, Mr. Adolf, would lie on that property spectrum.
Well, the thing I remember about it, like, instead of railroads, you have to buy Hitler's. But the thing I remember about it is that they were trying to so closely replicate what Hitler's childhood was like that they discover this is happening because these fathers of the Hitlers start dying in weird accidents because Hitler's father died when he was 13. So these boys are all 13 and their dads are dying, and they figure out these guys are connected because their sons look exactly alike. And
I just love that you use the term the Hitlers.
The Hitlers.
It just makes me laugh so much.
The mini Hitlers.
Oh my God.
But we have gone very far afield here to talk about a movie from the 1970s that, and again, this is before my time, so no wonder you have never heard of it. But yeah, it's called The Boys from Brazil, and it's, if somebody is very interested in the idea of many clones of the same individual being raised in different house and home environments across the world, this is a movie to check out. Maybe after the Orphan Black season is over and you're really jonesing for some cloney material.
You know, the Orphan Black off season of like 10 months?
Yeah, the Orphan Black Clone Film Festival. It's 10 months long.
They should sponsor that, and that's where they can break out Orphan Black Agrigula.
Yeah, totally.
What do they call that? Well, I was about to say Blackfest, but I don't think that name would work.
Yeah, that I think the name needs a little work.
A little bit of work. But you were talking about monitoring before. What did you think about this whole thing about how Donnie is still kind of monitoring Allison? And is he still giving information back to Dyad, or is he just doing it because it's sort of in his system at this point from what he used to do?
I think they must be talking to Dyad because this is... You know, later in the episode, Allison convinces Cosima to supply her own urine because she says Dyad's our best hope to stay healthy. Yeah. And I imagine that, especially knowing what's happening to Cosima, Allison is fine right now, but she may not always be fine. And so she needs to keep monitoring her vital signs just in case she starts to show symptoms of the clone cooties.
Yep, which is what Cosima was so vehemently against. And I don't know. Were you in Cosima's court there for this episode? I was not.
Well, Cosima has some kind of emotional baggage around this because she's not just giving her information to Dyad. She's giving it to her ex-girlfriend who is, you know, she's being a little inappropriate.
Yeah, very much so. Shay, now I'm starting to lean a little more towards what you were saying about Shay. Shay may have some ulterior motives that we don't know about.
Yeah, but... if I was Shay, I think I would react exactly the same way. Oh, your ex is just showing up at my apartment and knows exactly who I am. That's a little weird, and I'm totally going to eavesdrop, and that's just kind of messed up.
Would it make the situation better if the ex was Baylor Wilson?
Well, that is a sticky situation.
She just showed up. It's in your MO. So I'm gonna actually take a shower instead of pretending to and leaving the door half ajar.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? But yeah, it was kind of. It's a little bit of an awkward. I would say it is definitely a sticky situation that we're going into here, where Delphine just rolls up like nothing's wrong. Like, hey, how's it going, Cosima? By the way, can you pee into this?
Yeah, so I was trying to wrap my head around this because it was just simply to check up on her to make sure that the protein synthesizing or whatever you call it with the castor virus, right? It wasn't necessarily to like bring her in and use her as a test subject like they might have done so with Helena.
Right. They just want to, you know, if they can get a clone sample without having to kidnap anybody, that's obviously the ideal case right now.
I don't know if that's a possibility on this show.
Yeah, it's true. Like, nobody wants to give up anything.
Yeah. So then I can understand the suspicion on Cosima's part, but I still, like, just pee in the damn cup. You know?
Yeah, like, you're going to get rid of that anyway. Like, why not give it to someone who would like it?
Yeah, and it's not like, again, it's not like you said, it's not like she's being pulled in there and having all these tests done on her, like what we saw happen to Sarah last episode. She just has to pee in the cup and give it to her, and then she'll run it. That's really, she's not going to try to create another clone or anything or barter it to the casters for something.
Yeah, right. And, you know, that comes back to exactly like why Allison is willingly supplying this information. Like, that's been her approach all along. Like, if I just give them what they want, they're not going to strap me to a bed and, like, slice into my skull.
Yeah, and it definitely, I mean, it's gotten her where she is today, where her monitor is very comfortable with what he's doing, very comfortable, considering he is very frank about her menstrual flow.
Well, that's Donnie.
That's Donnie. Knowing Donnie, that probably wasn't even a question on the chart.
Yeah, Donnie's just like, so, Allison, do you have that not-so-fresh feeling?
Yes, exactly. He's... What is that a commercial for again? I'm trying to remember.
Summer's Eve.
Okay, so Donnie is all for summer. So this episode of Orphan Black is sponsored to you by Summer's Eve.
Yep. And, you know, we got plenty of douches in the show, so it's a natural match.
Very much so. Considering, again, this Portuguese guy, it was weird to see him back. Considering that the last time we saw him was like season one, episode three.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I'm glad that we got this little bit of exposition because Felix knows who the guy is.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. But Vic wasn't there when his niece was there, which is kind of functions as like his translator / emissary / number two.
Yeah, I'm guessing they probably just brought in a new character in case this is going to be an ongoing thing and they can't get the guy back. Like, have there be a syndicate, and there's a couple of different people we can talk to if some of these guys are off being on other shows.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that I was fearing with Allison's storyline when we were getting into this whole drug dealing thing, is that I don't want it to really get involved with this crime syndicate. And I was happy it got inverted when we saw that that Jason really is not that type of person. But if we're bringing this in, I think now, though, I wonder now, are they going to be, what do you think they're going to be like in the game now that this whole thing has transpired and Donnie almost lost his nose to spite his face?
Yeah, I can't actually tell if this is going to be something, if this is going to be an ongoing concern, or now that they've kind of ironed out what needs to happen, is it going to run like clockwork and it's just going to be like, oh, this is our job now?
Yeah, because, I mean, they got the place, but I feel like that wasn't, I feel like that's only the first step. They were treating it like it was the final step, like, great, now we can run our drug business without any sort of effort or error or problem. And I feel like, no, you got the space. That creates thousands of more problems that you have to deal with now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe they're taking the wrong lessons away from Breaking Bad.
That's very true. Again, I think we've theorized that they stopped like halfway through season five and thought, okay, well, they lived happily ever after, and so can we.
Happily ever after, a big storage locker full of money. It's all good.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like you said, I also wonder when these people will come back as well, because this niece, I definitely agree. If they can't get this actor back, I think the niece could definitely serve as a big example of like the big crime boss that wants her head on a silver platter.
Yeah, but I love that they brought him back, because you have to imagine that the drug scene in Toronto, everyone who works in it is probably going to know everyone else. So it makes sense that they'd be going to the same guy. Like, there are not two pouches, darling.
Yeah, I do not know how many small time criminal bosses exist in Canada.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there were plenty in Albuquerque, and Toronto is much bigger than Albuquerque. So
yeah, I guess if we're using that sort of logic, there must be at least twice as many.
Yeah. But you could imagine that if you're going into a drug deal with someone, it might possibly be the same guy because, you know, universe is not that big.
Yeah, it's weird considering that, like, the people that Allison has gone into this business with were a guy that turns out to be her ex from high school and a guy that Felix, that is like a friend, quote unquote, friend of a friend. This is a very small web of drug running we have here in Orphan Black.
That's true. But, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you end up going to... You end up like competing in a sport, or like competitive Scrabble players all know each other, like bar trivia people all know each other. I imagine it's the same thing with drug dealers. You all know each other after a while.
Yeah, that's very true. So speaking of Jason, I mean, were you expecting, I was kind of expecting the kiss to happen, but I don't know what to feel about it now.
Yeah, that was going to happen eventually. And yeah. I guess I'm glad that it did not happen to... That it did not happen to Allison, because I think Allison really could have been tempted.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you would hate to deal with that storyline of like, now Allison's cheating on her husband. Like, that seems even more soapy than some of the more minuscule soapy stuff that's going on right now. I don't mean to make a pun on their front for their drug running business, but it just, I mean, I think we knew as soon as we saw the guy and learned that he was her ex that like Donnie has a right to be territorial, because it's clear that this guy definitely has some sort of magnetism over the Hendrixes.
Yeah. Well, and that, of course, was one of my favorite Donnie moments of the entire episode. Like, he's getting ready to go on this ride along with Jason, and he grabs Allison and, like, shoves his tongue down her throat and, like, looking at Jason the entire time.
Now, in this ride-along equivalent, does that make Donnie the Kevin Hart and Jason is the Ice Cube?
I think so. I think so, but, like, much, much wider.
Yeah, so did Kevin Hart's mother, did she choose to have the short sperm then? Give me the shortest, loudest sperm you have.
Yeah, apparently that's what was going on there.
It's each their own.
Yeah, you know, there's good, valid reasons behind everyone's choices.
Yeah.
You know, it takes all kinds to make a family, as we learned from the campaign speech from Kasima/Allison.
Yeah, well, I guess from Allison specifically, Kasima's one was more of like, color inside the lines, I'm a lesbian, no I'm not.
Yeah, as a lesbian supporter.
Oh boy, which probably struck a chord a little bit with the Marcy Coates, because I may be jumping to conclusions here. I feel like Marcy Coates may be a little homophobic.
Yeah, I think, well, Marcy Coates is kind of appealing to that, like, family values, we don't want anything to change kind of demographic, which is ridiculous because her whole platform involves like making a drastic change, and that's why Allison threw her hat in the ring.
Yeah, well, I'm basing this specifically on her like reaction with Felix. Yeah. Which she I think she said like
interesting choice. Yeah. Yeah,
interesting choice of a campaign manager.
Yeah, and yeah, I could see, well, and I think that's the area they live in. Like, everyone seems pretty conservative and kind of shocked to have Felix in the middle of all of this.
Yeah, except for Allison, who, you know, has sex with other people's husbands and then watches them die and then sells drugs on the side.
Right. But I think that's also kind of the point of their entire neighborhood. Like, it looks one way, but it's really another.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff is going on under the surface.
So what are we to assume happened with the election then? Do we think that Allison presumably won? Is it still to happen? I'm confused about the whole campaign trail on this.
I think the election is still going to happen. I think we're going to have an episode where the election takes place and we're going to be in the campaign headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to probably, you know, they're going to be like watching it on the news, because that's what you do with the school trustee elections.
Yeah, I don't know how much of, yeah, I don't know how big of a news story it might be. Again, this community seems like it's playing it up way, way more than any other realistic society. But if that's the case, it might make like the 6 o'clock news headline story.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it might be one of those things where they're doing the returns in real time, like, you know, 78% of precincts reporting, which is, you know, all of them.
Yeah. Slow news day today.
Yeah. Like, all 3,000 people that are voting in this election have, you know, have filled out their ballots, and now we'll go to count them.
How many people do you think actually would vote in this election?
I'm not actually sure. I would imagine it's, because it's, like, within one school district, like, I know how about how big the school districts are in New York City. And I would have to imagine they're not quite as big in suburban Toronto, but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, considering how voting turnout is in the United States, like, I'm assuming Canada is better, but because this is such a small scale election, it's like the equivalent of like electing your town sheriff. You know, how many people actually adamantly go to the polls and say, I'm going to vote for this person as the town sheriff?
Well, Allison's mother, for one, she seems she has very strong opinions about who should be the school trustee.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, all my sympathy for Allison's mother kind of went out the window when she basically said, I'm not going to vote for you. She's your daughter. As much as you may like want to have her live a better life, just vote for your damn daughter, lady.
Yeah. Presumably she's running for this because she wants it. And you should, you know, your adult daughter who's making a decent life choices, you know, go ahead and support that.
And you know what? If you don't want to, you don't need to vote for her. Just tell her you're going to vote for her and then don't. Okay, too.
And don't hang up a poster of her opposition where she's going to see it. Like, that's just mean.
Yeah, that is just extremely mean spirited because everyone knows that you're her mother. It's not like you just ambled into town Harold Hill style and you're the stranger that nobody knows about. Like, everyone will say, oh, Allison Hendricks' mother has a poster of Marcy Coates hanging up in her store. What does that say about her?
Yeah, that's incredibly damaging when you think about it. It's like, well, her own mother doesn't even want to vote for her.
Yeah. So do you think we're going to see her after this episode?
Yeah, I think we have not seen the last of her, but I don't think we're going to see a lot of her.
Or at least if her last scene with her this episode is any indication, she will not be inducted into Clone Club anytime soon.
No, definitely not. Although I think I felt like it was a really abrupt turnaround, and there in two cases this episode characters experience this very abrupt turnaround where all of a sudden they are feeling a totally different way about someone, and it seemed a little bit too quick to me. And Allison's mother is one of those cases where all it took was this one speech and she's suddenly on board with the campaign, she's going to vote for her and she's very proud of her, and their relationship seems to be repaired.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you presume this is what, like 30 years of pent up feelings and, you know, expectations pushed onto someone. To have it be undone in a speech is a little unreal. I'm also still confused about what exactly compelled Allison to show Cosima to her as well and to reveal their secret, considering that like they weren't really in any sort of danger. Was Allison just like felt it was the right vibe and that they'd sort of broke bread over this and said, okay, well, now here's the time to bring this up?
Yeah, like maybe she was feeling the family vibes because mother was finally supportive and she's like, oh, well, maybe I can trust her now. And, it, you know, this is a big part of my life, so I'm going to bring her out. And it was also, you know, her mother was throwing this sort of genetic thing like, I wanted you to be genetically awesome. And Allison's like, yeah, guess what? They pulled one over on you.
Yeah, I also wonder if maybe Allison's like, well, remember how, don't blame me that the first half of my speech sucked. Here's the person that made that speech.
Yeah, kind of. And I love the response, like, oh, she doesn't look anything like you.
Oh, man. Yeah, this is the first time I've seen the word mulatto said in a show in a good number of years.
Yeah, whoa. All right, we're not supposed to like this lady. She said something casually racist.
Yeah, that is that. Maybe she's showing her age a little bit, considering that I you hear like your grandparents in your 70s or 80s use those terms.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought, you know, it was a very old white lady thing to say, like, I don't know how those hairstyles work.
Yeah, I didn't even understand like why she would be. I'm like looking at Cosima, I'm like, would she even be considered of mixed race? But I guess if by their old person logic, the hair gives it away, then I guess that's what makes the case.
If you've never seen white people dreadlocks, I guess it would be confusing.
Yeah, I guess Mrs. Hendricks has never been in California whatsoever. Has never met Vince Sly.
Yeah, has never been to Burning Man.
Yeah, exactly. I can only imagine that maybe she picked up like Allison's initial father at Burning Man, and that's why she needed like genetic modification.
Yeah, maybe so. But I think it was just very telling that, and I guess this was the one thing that kind of saved this moment for me, was that Allison's mom is still going to be Allison's mom. And that was the moment at which you saw was she's just going to see whatever she wants to see and think whatever she wants to think. And it's not a total watershed moment for her.
Yeah. And even so, like, that's pretty, I mean, I know clones is a huge jumping off point to like jump to in terms of logic to begin with. But I mean, for her to believe like, oh, yes, this girl that looks identical to you must be your half sister is a pretty unbelievable concept in itself.
Yeah, I think if she's going to drop this bombshell, what she really needed to do was have all the clones present. Like, wait a couple of weeks until everyone's all back together, get the whole clone club together, and then drop it on Mom. That's kind of undeniable.
Though I don't know how much Allison's theory would have held water if she said, like, well, there's one here. There's a couple in Mexico. They're coming some one day. I'm feeling it. They're going to come up in a couple days. Then we'll all get together and show you.
Yeah. And there was another one in Toronto, and she was a cop, but she died.
Yeah, except she only appears in dream sequences now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she really needs to have a little bit more hard evidence before she goes that way.
Well, she's not the cop, so she doesn't know that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I guess it was an impulse that she had, and she followed the impulse, and it ended up not paying off.
Yeah. Though, I guess her relationship with her mother is somewhat repaired, so at least they're on friendly terms, and she has the shop now. But who knows if, from Allison's perspective, if things are still distant between them.
Yeah. Who knows? They got their little, like, modern family tied up in a bow ending.
Yeah, that aside from that speech doing Danny Tanner-esque, it was very Modern Family. You know, you could take that speech, give it to Ty Burrell, and put it in a voiceover over the end of the episode, and that's pretty, it would fit in perfectly.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, little clips of different subgroups of people, like, you know, here's Mitch and Cam and Lily, and they're all hugging about their family, and, you know, here's the Dunphy kids, and they're hugging. It was exactly... It was ripped out of Modern Family.
And for good measure, you could just throw in the random clip of Helena and S hugging.
Yeah, which you know, that's the other watershed character moment that I didn't quite believe. Because here's Helena, who's been trained her entire life to murder people. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. S, admittedly kind of a badass. And I was kind of surprised to see her, like, Indiana Jones her way into this cantina.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I jinxed myself last week when I said that we've only seen Mrs. S really in her house. This is the first time that we've seen her outside the house the entire season.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, it's like they say in Mean Girls, it's, you know, it's so weird to see your teacher outside of school. It's like watching a dog walk on its hind legs.
Exactly. And it's, and I guess, well, maybe S thought like, well, the clone that accosted me is dead, so I guess I'm safe for now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and she's supposed to, like, her people are supposed to go, but I guess she doesn't trust it to her people. She's going to go there herself. And it just seemed a little bit, it was that scene in Good Will Hunting, spoiler alert, where Robin Williams' character is talking to Matt Damon's character, mm-hmm, and just, like, kind of badgering him with, it's not your fault, it's not your fault. Yeah. That was the moment that I was thinking of when I see this all go down. And Helena's, like, scratching and biting and punching. And Mrs. S just envelops her in this, like, you know, all-consuming Irish mother hug. And it's all okay suddenly.
There's something I'm trying to pinpoint in terms of pop culture. But there's some sort of movie or TV show where, like, something very similar happens. Where, like, someone slaps someone else and then, like, holds them in an embrace until they finally break down. I'm trying to remember what it is. But it was literally that. Now, but though I wanted to see a fist fight break out. I feel like it's been a while since we saw, like, a brawl break out on Orphan Black.
Yeah, it's true. And it was nice to see them kind of hold their own for a minute there.
Yeah, very true. It was fun because they brought this up. This was what the behind the scenes showcase was this week, was basically them talking about, like, hey, Helena and Mrs. S never had a scene together before. Let's try that out. And I thought it was a great combination, just because, especially with the given circumstances that Helena knows that Mrs. S sold her out to save Kira. I think it added so many big stakes to it that I did not feel these scenes were scant at all this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like that they're kind of experimenting with that. They're like, well, these two characters have never talked to each other. Let's put them in a room together. Like, Felix and Rachel, they've never talked to each other. Put them in a room together. You know, Helena and Mrs. S, they've never really talked. Put them in a room together. Cosima and Allison, they almost never interact with each other specifically. Put them in a room together.
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, I think in lieu of some of the mixed reactions that this season has been getting across the board, I am very happy that they're trying these new things. You know, they're not necessarily sticking to a formula that some seasons would do in their third season.
Yeah. Yeah. And next week, Donnie and Helena, that's going to be good.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing. And I mean, considering that those are probably two of the comic relief characters on this show, it's going to be I hope that gets brought to the main storyline again, though who knows, because Donnie was kind of at the forefront this week. I'm confused about Mrs. S's plan, or at least what Sarah was outlining to them at the beginning of the episode. So they were waiting for someone named Benjamin to take them, but also Mrs. S's friends were coming to bring them like immigration papers to get them back over the border.
I thought Benjamin was the guy that had the papers.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. But it was also, it was one of those things where they start talking about Benjamin. I'm like, oh crap. Is this someone that was in here before that I missed that I can't think of?
I thought the exact same thing. I was trying to remember what was the name of like the dock worker that saw, you know, Helena and Sarah being born, I think. And then Mrs. S goes to him in season two and has sex with him. But I don't think his name is Benjamin.
Yeah, I don't know. Benjamin is just a random dude. And this is shocking for this show because there are no random dudes on this show, but we didn't see him. We'll probably see him later now that his name has been invoked. Like you say it three times, he's like Beetlejuice. He's going to appear. But for right now, instead of Benjamin, we get badass Mrs. S showing up in the cantina. And we need to talk about the bartender in the cantina.
Oh, my God. Like they talk about like, you know, the mystical, you know, they lampoon like the mystical janitor in Not Another Teen Movie. This is the mystical bartender.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yes, that's how women are. You're like, oh, you're pregnant. No beer for you. And we need to you go take a shower and everybody else will sort it out because that's how women are.
Yeah, so there's so many things to pick apart here. First, which bar has a shower in its back room?
I don't know, but this is something, I don't know if you've ever experienced the wonder that is the shower beer, but this is something that somebody could capitalize on.
Oh yeah, I lived in a fraternity house for 2 years, Jess. I very much know what a shower beer is.
Shower beer is the best, and, you know, there should be more bars that have a shower.
Yeah, I just... Do they use it for that purpose, or is it just, do you think like people that they're the denizens of the bar live there and they go to shower afterwards? It's just weird that she's like, oh yes, don't worry, I have a shower. Like all bars do. Use the shower.
I have to imagine that the bar building also contains the home that she lives in. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of those things like, oh, just go in the back room where my house is and there's a shower because it is my house.
So it's like a bar and breakfast?
Yeah, or it's like, you know, lots of times there's an apartment above a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just one of those cases like, oh, I live in the back and I work here. It's a short commute. Very convenient.
Or what if the scene that we didn't see was Sarah going back there to find that the quote unquote shower is like the dishwashing like handle just rigged up to a higher level with on a hook?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that thing, I always thought it looked like a pretty good shower head, so... And you know the water in those things gets hot.
That's true. Did Sarah just not hear anything that was going on with the fist fight at all?
Well, she was in the shower. She probably couldn't hear anything.
I don't know. That sounds like we need to get Serial on the case. That sounds like a very, like, murderer-esque... That's like, I think that's out of Legally Blonde, right? That... The daughter like claimed she was in the shower the entire time, so she couldn't hear the murder.
Yeah, well, Sarah didn't have a perm to rinse out.
Oh, if only for so many reasons. A, Legally Blonde reference, and B, if Sarah had a perm, I think it would be amazing.
Yeah, so many layers to unravel there, but I think more like Sarah probably knew that was going to happen, and Helena even said we're going to fight, and I think it was wise of Sarah to take, you know, mystical bartender's advice and just go and take the shower, have the shower beer, let it sort itself out. And by the time she comes out, she's clean. You know, she's ready to face the day and everybody loves each other. It was the best of all worlds.
So did you get a sense that mystical bartender initially had that sort of Shay vibe with her, that she was going to turn out to be working for somebody else?
Yeah, I did get that little bit of vibe, especially since she seemed to be really invested in the business that was going on there. Like, yeah, she seemed to know everybody's business and want a part of it. And I was like, oh, is Sarah going to go back and take a shower and like six Caster clones are going to be waiting there?
Yeah. Well, also, this bartender has like Sherlock Holmes-esque observation skills as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like she should give up bartending and like, I don't know, become a private eye or something, because she has much better observational skills than the typical bartender.
Yeah. I would watch the spinoff where people just come into this bar and she fixes her problems.
Yeah, I would absolutely. I mean, isn't that called Cheers?
Yeah, it's a lot like Cheers, but, you know, without all the macho posturing.
Like, what would be the Mexican version? Like aplauso?
Yeah. Aplauso. I like it.
This is our requisite show that we suggest to be produced.
Yeah. Where everybody knows your name and lets you take a shower.
I love it. So, and what I guess, like, you know, there's only a few scenes of these, but the last one was, you know, Sarah comes out of the shower and S says, like, well, Helena's walking it off. Did you have the hunch that, like, I thought for a second that Helena had taken off once again, that she wasn't actually coming back?
No, they would have staged that differently. I think it was more like, oh, we don't feel like having the stunt double on site here. We know Helena's around. We'll just put her in the other room for a second.
Did you like the two of them having that? Again, it was part of like one of those montages. So it flashed back and forth between like that and Allison's speech. But did you like their little moments where they just kind of said, like, this is what happened with me this week?
Yeah, it was a little bit light on. I felt like this episode was like, what if the main character of the show was not Sarah? What if it was Allison?
Yeah, very much so. Which, is an interesting perspective to have. And I'm glad the show is taking those risks and started to really lean into that, especially this season. But it's weird to see, especially considering that Sarah had maybe a total of 4 minutes of screen time this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, again, I went to the place of like, oh, the actress that plays Sarah must have wanted the week off.
Nope. I guess the personality facet of Tatiana Maslany is that plays Sarah wanted a week off.
Yeah, we're like, oh, wow, Allison's actress must be really psyched to have her moment in the sun this week. Oh, right. It's the same actress.
And also the disparity between their two stories is not really like you would think like Mrs. S would have the equivalent considering Sarah says like, well, Paul's dead and I have these dreams about Beth and I escaped this prison compound. And Mrs. S says, well, Gracie's with me. And we danced around and she drank alcohol and she has this disease now.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we just glossed over all of that because we know what's happening. So we assume they got a long drive ahead of them to get back to Canada. So they'll probably catch up with each other on the way.
What did she just leave Gracie home alone?
That's a good question. I wonder what Gracie is up to right now.
Unless they do like... Mrs. S says, Felix, I thought you were supposed to watch her. Felix says, I thought you were supposed to watch her.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they just like sat her down. She's got 18 years of Canadian television to catch up on.
That's very true. She has to watch a lot of Corner Gas.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got some Red Green to watch. And
of course, all the Degrassis.
All the Degrassis. We got, you know, two whole seasons of Amazing Race Canada and one coming up.
Do you think she would be a hockey fan, like the hockey player team from Amazing Race Canada too?
Yeah, I think she'd totally be on board with that.
Yeah, I would agree. Though I'm trying to think what were the most religious teams on the first two seasons of Amazing Race Canada.
I think the Timms were pretty religious. So mm-hmm. she was probably a Timms fan because, you know, the strong familial bond kind of appealed to her.
Yeah, that's very true. And she probably would not have been starstruck by watching Body Break on there.
No, definitely not. And that was, you know, that's one of the great things about growing up so sheltered is you didn't have to watch Body Break.
Yeah, it's one of the few pluses of growing up in a cult.
Yeah, one of the few pluses of growing up in a cult, no Body Break.
No, you don't need to. We don't watch Body Break.
Yeah, or leave her in front of YouTube and let her look up all the Canadian heritage moments.
Yeah, that's very true. So I guess she was... Maybe S trusted her to leave the house, or maybe she was still in the lab. I don't know. We didn't see her in the lab this episode, but for all we know, like Rachel, they could kind of put her up in her own bed in the Dyad Institute.
Yeah, they got lots of room there, especially since like half the people from Dyad are dead now.
And especially since since Rachel thinks they're starting to kick her out, that they're like, oh, well, maybe Gracie's the new Rachel.
Yeah. And I think you'd have to have a pretty bad head injury to believe that line of thought.
Yeah, you have to get a pretty big pencil in your eye to think that.
Yeah. And how much did you like Rachel being handed a pencil?
Oh, boy. That's like she's probably feeling like phantom eye or something just for every time she touches or looks at a pencil.
I'm like, that's just mean. Like, give her a crayon.
Yeah, exactly. Or give her like a one of those like multiple colored pens or even a marker. Why go with the pencil? I don't know. I know we're in a lab and, you know, we do so many facts and figures that you want to be able to erase your work. But come on, that's a low blow.
Yeah, it's one of those things like, you know how Hannibal Lecter was only supposed to ever have soft tip markers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So I don't know. And so what do you make here about Rachel's move where she tells Scott, like, I know what the code is, which is what we assumed from last week. And she says, but I'm only going to give it to you if I get Sarah. And I think this begs a larger question now of, since we spent a week away from Castor, do you think we're done with Castor?
We might be done with Castor. We blew him up and, you know, we don't even, I think next week we're going to see whatever caster clones have survived, if any, but I think we're not going back there for any lengthy amount of time. Like any caster remnants are going to get absorbed by the bigger plot.
Because especially now that we're back to Cosima kind of being sick again, with her coughing fits and her bleeding in the bathtub, I think if we're going back to that, well, this is going to become much more about curing the disease, which is sort of what Cosima in season two was, and less about this threat of this other set of clones.
Yeah. And it's also like, why is she only going to tell Sarah? Sarah doesn't know what it means. Like, tell Cosima. She's the one that might have a prayer of figuring it out.
Yeah, so that makes me wonder whether Rachel wants to get Sarah in the room so she could get, like, revenge on her.
Yeah, so she can hang on to that pencil.
Because I guess from Rachel's point of view, that she thought that Sarah was the one to plan her big escape when really it was Cosima. But I think that Rachel's like, you know, I'm going to... Rachel will probably want to go after Sarah like Helena did to Mrs. S this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think, if I'm Sarah, I don't want to be anywhere near Rachel for a variety of reasons.
No, not at all. But at least, you know, Scott can give the excuse of like, well, she's in another country right now.
Yeah. We don't actually know where she is right now.
Yeah. And also, Lily, can we talk about the badass Scott moment this episode?
Oh, Scott. Scott's really coming into his own.
I just loved it, considering that, again, he's like the goofy comic relief. It's almost like seeing Donnie do something badass.
Yeah.
But unlike Donnie, Scott doesn't, like, you know, pull up in the nice car and be like, oh, this is great, guys. I love this car.
Yeah. Scott is more like he tried to have a badass moment and he semi-succeeded, whereas Donnie has tried and failed many times.
Yeah, I love that when, you know, Rachel is saying, like, you know, Rachel thinks that he's stupid by being like, you know, when I said we're going to play this game, I didn't mean that we actually would. And he sort of looks up at her with, like, kind of those crazy eyes. He's like, yeah. No, you don't understand. If someone walks in here, we're going to learn how to play the game. And it's like, ooh, Scott has, I mean, I could tell, but Scott's kind of at the end of his rope here, considering how he's been kind of being jerked around by Cosima, not coming into work. And now he's obviously very intimidated and scared by Rachel and having Felix accost her last episode. So he's kind of been the butt monkey of the Dyad Institute.
Yeah. Yeah. He's finally got someone he can have a little power over.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you going to do? You're in a wheelchair and you don't have any depth perception. You're going to play this damn card game with me.
I just need to stand on the left side of you and I have all the power.
Yeah. Oh, we shouldn't mess with people that have one eye. That's just sad.
That is very sad. But
you know, on the grand scale of ways to mess with Rachel, we got drawing an eye on her eye patch. We got pressing on the wound and we got making her play a card game with you. I think Scott is still probably the nicest person that Rachel has had to interact with in a very long time.
Yeah, no wonder why Rachel wants to get out of there. I think maybe the board game was the last straw for her of like, I need to leave. You know what? A Mexican prison is better for me than this place right now.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, very true. But it's interesting because Rachel has been such a non-factor for the first batch of episodes here. Really, she's appeared in like three episodes, really, total. So to have her become this big driving force for the latter half is something that we definitely didn't expect at the beginning.
Yeah, although I think it seems pretty predictable that she's kind of assumed the Helena role where she was the big bad character in the last season. And now they're kind of embracing her into the Clone Club fold in little ways.
Yeah, very true. So does that mean do we have a singular big bad? Then was Virginia Cody our big bad? Is Delphine now our big bad?
Well, Delphine is another one of those characters. I think she's very much like Paul, where we don't know if she's bad or not.
Yeah, she just, maybe it's because of the actress's delivery, but she's always so cold in the way she's a very much an ice queen that you can't help but say, like, she must have ulterior motives somewhere.
Yeah, she's just disaffected, but maybe that's just because she's European.
Yeah, I definitely think the accent doesn't. It's like, you know, when stereotypically when Americans see a British person in a movie, they typically think they're the villain.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's kind of, it's pretty stereotypical French person. Like if you lapse into like a very bad fake French accent, you kind of take on the disaffected tone.
Yeah, very true. The French as speaking stereotypically are not, you know, they in the an infamous web cartoon, they were asked to fire the missiles, but they are tired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's a little bit laconic, I think, is the word.
Very much so. But now she's in a position of power. We're still trying to figure out exactly what that power is. But it's interesting, you know, if this is, again, such a weird place that season two left us, we're trying to figure out, like, where is the Dyad Institute doing good for them now? And it seems like we're leaning more towards, yes, it is good for them. At least that's where this episode tried to leave us with.
Yeah, or at least nobody has any weird hidden motives. Whereas you didn't really know who was in charge before. You didn't know them that well. And Delphine, at least, we've had some involvement with her. We know what she can do, and we know who she gets along with and who she doesn't get along with. And we know she's relatively new to the whole Enterprise. So, you know, I'd be inclined to trust her to have our best interests in heart.
Yeah, that's very true. It's just, it's going to be, I mean, we only have three episodes left at this point. So I have no idea what they're going to try to do with the Dyad Institute at this point. But I'm assuming this is going to become very disease focused for the next few episodes.
Yeah, yeah, I have a feeling. I have a feeling it's going to be all about the protein that's in the Castor clone. And I think that's how we're going to see if there are any Castor clones left. We're going to have one of them go into the lab so we can look at his protein.
Yes, Orphan Black. More talk about proteins than an episode of The Jersey Shore.
It's true. That's true. You know, Orphan Black, we got Jim Tan and Protein.
GTP.
GTP.
I don't know. I don't think any of them are very tan. So specifically Helena. Helena might need to. Once, you know, we'll have summer break in a few weeks. Helena should definitely hit the sun for a little bit.
Yeah, like maybe, you know, they had Clone Club dance party last season. Maybe they could have Clone Club Beach Club. They could have like a little Malibu Sands mini season.
I want it to be like Beach Blake and Bingo, like those old like 50s. beach movies where everyone's like doing the monkey on towels. That's what I want our next dance party to be.
See, what you just described sounds like Helena's next fever dream.
That's very true. We were not that far removed from it from the very first episode.
No, we just needed some, like, we need some more Russian language Beach Boys covers, and then we all need to go to the beach and, you know, do your little 60s dances in high-waisted bikinis.
And then what would like a beach ball roll over and start talking to Helena?
Yeah, or maybe it's a crab. Like, maybe she's graduated to a crab. Maybe it's all got to be crustacean and crustacean adjacent.
Can it please speak with a Jamaican accent? Helena, you got to leave your sister's moon.
And she's going to pick it up and eat it whole.
Exactly. Like, Helena, what was that? Is crab. And then cut to credits.
Yeah. Yeah, I was hoping we'd get more Helena eating this episode, because I love it whenever they give her something to eat and she just demolishes it.
Well, it is Mexico. She might have succumbed to Montezuma's revenge off camera and we just don't know it.
Yeah, well, she had a plate of food, and I thought it was funny when Mystical Bartender took away her cutlery. He was like, you can eat this with a spoon. And I'm like, yeah, it's true. Helena doesn't really like cutlery anyway. She's just going to eat it with her hands.
Yeah, she usually, from what I remember, doesn't she eat like chicken, raw chicken, not raw chicken, but like a full rotisserie chicken off the bone using only her hands?
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, she would not be out of place within a Baylor Wilson video.
No, very, very much so. She's definitely mimicking that guy that has the full chicken dangling from his mouth.
Yep. So, yeah, and I think she did get something to eat, but we were spared the sight of her shoveling it all in with one hand.
Yeah, I feel like she can either eat or fight in a scene. It's usually not both.
Yeah, it's kind of like kicking ass and chewing bubblegum.
Yeah, exactly.
Came to eat tacos and punch bitches in the mouth, and I'm all out of tacos.
It doesn't scan as well as the first one, but we'll go with it.
Yeah, it needs a little work. I'll be on that.
Perfect.
All right. Have we been everywhere we need to be?
I mean, I think we have. We've gone to Canada and Mexico to several institutions. Like you said, next week we have Dalny and Helena stuff to look forward to. And it looks like maybe a new clone or the return or some sort of blonde clone, which will be very interesting. I don't know if that's someone disguised as someone else or whether that's a completely new character that we're introduced to.
Yeah, like maybe that's the clone that almost hooked up with her own brothers.
Yeah, I was thinking it was that one. I forget the name of her.
Crystal.
Crystal. So it could be Crystal, or maybe Tony decided to switch back.
I don't think Tony decided to switch back. I think
we're not going to see Tony.
No, I think this is either Crystal or this is clone to be named later, or, you know, an outside chance that Allison decided to get a totally drastically new look.
Yeah, she could have. Maybe she figures, you know,
it works for Helena.
Yeah. I mean, it's to her, blondes have more fun, and that means that more fun means you'll be elected school board treasurer.
Yeah, because what's more fun, really, than working for the school board?
Nothing. Nothing is more fun.
So maybe dealing drugs. Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, but come on. I mean, you know, taking roll call, discussing the school budget. I want to go out and do that right now.
Yeah, you're right. That is a nonstop party.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact,
that's going to be our clone montage. Like, everybody's just going to be on the school board.
Yes, but it's not going to be a montage. It's just going to be music playing over a full minute by minute meeting of the school board.
Yes. Yeah, and the music is going to be like the girl from Ipanema.
I love that's very Mad Men-esque.
That is very Mad Men-esque. All right, so Mike, we need to have a hashtag for this particular episode.
Do you have any that you've written down?
I've got Shower Cerveza.
Shower Cerveza, I like that one. I have Orphan Blackopoly.
Orphan Blackopoly. So either one of those would work just fine for me.
Yeah, they can go with either one. Yeah. They can much like you know, you can. These will be half sister hashtags. Apparently.
Yeah, or like Por qué no los dos.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we had a lot of great stuff coming up. Many of our favorite shows have wrapped up their seasons, but there's still a lot going on in the post-show recaps universe. We got Game of Thrones coming up later tonight, and this week I'm going to get to fill in for a Game of Thrones book club with Antonio Mazzaro. We are both covering this because Josh Wigler is off in Cambodia for some reason.
Yeah, who knows? He might be talking to his own mystical bartender at some point.
It's true. The mystical bartender is going to like counsel him about Samwell Tarly and slip him a glass of mead.
I'm super excited to hear you on the book club, Jess. I know you're an avid reader, and you've been itching to get your Game of Thrones opinions recorded. So this is going to be, I'm really, really excited, especially to have you on with Antonio as well.
You are not half as excited as I am. I tried to reread all the books before this even happened. So,
oh my God,
I did.
How far did you get?
Did not get very far. I ended up like, I read a couple of chapters, and then I thought, well, I'll just jump to the chapters where I know stuff is happening. And so I've been jumping around a lot, but
that's still an admirable effort, though.
Yeah, I'm doing my best, and I'm on the wiki a lot, so I'm gonna be full of knowledge.
Perfect. Well, speaking of Antonio Mazzaro, I'm actually gonna be you'll be hearing my voice with him a couple times this coming week as well. Tuesday is gonna be the season finale of Community, so Antonio and I are hoping to get back together at some point in the few days afterwards to talk about the sixth season as a whole. And finally, this thing that I've been hinting towards the past few weeks, the first iteration of it is finally going to be dropping on Tuesday. Ooh. Get pumped. It's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, there's a lot of great stuff going on. Even though we're getting ready for our Orphan Black beach party, there's definitely still a lot of content to keep you content while you're partying on the beach.
That's true. You don't have to break out those board games just yet.
No, as fun as they may be, or as confusing as they may be, Rachel will not have to break them out when she goes to the beach.
Yeah, that's true. She'll be right up there dancing up a storm with everybody else.
In her wheelchair, just rolling around.
Yep, back and forth.
that would be an amazing part of the dance party.
And we give her an eye patch that like matches the plastic flower lay around her neck.
Oh, I was going to say it can match your bathing suit. It has like polka dots on it.
Yeah, totally. Polka dot eye patch, like, you know, a coordinating flower lay.
And then I want a montage of everyone surfing, and it cuts to Rachel on the wheelchair on the surfboard.
Well, this is terrible.
Well, we have three episodes. It may happen in that time.
That's true. Or maybe she'll take a couple of wobbly steps like a deer.
Yeah, very, very true.
Yeah, we got a lot of ground to cover. Three episodes is a lot of time in Orphan Black time.
Yeah, but I'm totally excited to dive into it with you.
Yep. So, Mike, where are you on Twitter?
You can find me at a Mike Bloom type.
Yeah, and you can find me at Haymaker Hattie, and we would both love to talk all things Orphan Black with you during the week. And I guess if we have nothing else to do, before we break out the board games, we'll just wish you all a great week, and we'll see you right back here next week.